On this week's episode, Circles, General Availability to the Public. Tom York is releasing an album via the BitTorrent bundle, and Fire Chat and the Hong Kong protests.
I'm Tony Sakic.
I am Gordon Hall.
And I'm Eric Martindale.
And this is Decentralize. How's it going, everyone? We're here at the Decentralized Roundtable. I'm here with Eric, Gordon, and Chaz behind the boards as usual, and we have a very news-filled week here to talk about. And we're going to start off with Circle. Circle actually launched, and people are now able to purchase Bitcoin on Circle, and I personally had a chance to use it. I really enjoyed it. I wanted to get some other feedback from what others have heard and what they thought before I share mine. So I'm going to go to you, Eric. What do you think of Circle? What do you think about it? And what have you heard from people in the community that have used it?
One, I'm really excited to see another entrant into sort of the exchange market, especially serving the U.S. It is another great example of why it's so important to have clean user experience. Their launch didn't really go well. It's tough to launch a technically complex product to the public, especially in an open environment. But I think it's extremely positive in terms of having another option to acquire Bitcoin. The thing that was notable to me was that they're making it available to international markets. There was sort of a little bit of him and haw as to whether or not that actually worked. But I'm really excited for Circle.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good as well. I think the entire user experience is fantastic. Gordon, have you had a chance to check it out?
I have not had a chance to check it out, though I have read about it, and I second Eric's thoughts. I think that it's important to have another contender in the game where the consumers can actually acquire Bitcoin. That seems to be the number one barrier to entry. Is yeah, for the merchant, it makes perfect sense. There's no argument against it, but for the consumer, you know, how do I acquire it? What's the value to me? So the easier, you know, these companies make it for people to actually get Bitcoin in their hands is very important. So I'm excited about Circle.
Yeah, my official review will go like this. I purchased $100 in Bitcoin to give to my mom for a birthday gift. She doesn't have any, and I figured this would be a cool thing to give her, in addition to other things you'd give your mom, like a Barbra Streisand CD. So it wasn't like I just gave her this, and it was like, happy birthday, mom, here's Bitcoin. And she's like, oh, thanks, son. She was into it, and I feel fairly confident she could easily navigate Circle's, you know, process. And I love the fact that I don't need to link my bank account. I can just use a credit card and buy it. And I really do enjoy that. So I think it's something where the user experience is very positive. I've used other exchanges and no transaction has been as smooth as this. And considering they just launched it, it can only go up. So I'm very positive toward that, as well as TrueCoin coming out. I think that that's another thing that's going to make it easier for everyone to be able to purchase Bitcoin in a much easier fashion. And they're really hitting home runs here. The entire Circle interface is intuitive. It's fantastic. I don't want to rave about it too much because, you know, as soon as you do, something bad could happen, and I want Circle to stay as awesome as they are right now. So I do think that that's definitely a positive step for Bitcoin in the future. And I think the funny thing is, in the week that Circle launched, it is nowhere near the largest story about decentralization and decentralized technology. It's been a huge week, actually, in culture and in politics and in many different things, and that's what we're going to go on a little more about. We just wanted to get Circle out of the way because it created a huge uproar in the community for good reason, because it's a great product.
I want to just sort of back up a little bit and talk all about Circle and how important it is to of not replace one centralized banking system with another. I had a really long conversation yesterday with a lot of the folks on Soundtrack about acquiring your first Bitcoin versus becoming a true Bitcoin adopter. And okay, so user experience is very important for becoming getting into the Bitcoin and the new cryptocurrency ecosystem. Now, I have to stress, do not trust someone else with your money, right? And there should under no circumstances be a case where you are forced to trust someone else with your money. It's all about voluntarism and opting into something where you say, all right, well, I don't trust myself enough to trust to manage my money, but I'm going to deposit it in maybe this third-party service or distribute the keys with something like Copay or any other multi-sig solution. We have to be very careful to educate our moms, our friends, our coworkers, everyone around us about the importance of recognizing the decision that you're making when you put your money where you do not control the private keys. If you do not control the private keys, you are opening yourself up to theft and fraud. Do not do this. This is the same thing that the banks did with their centralized system, and it's going to be the same thing that many Bitcoin companies probably will do, where, and they already have, take a look at what happened with Mt. Gox, what happened with NeoNB, and all of the other projects where when someone trusts someone else with the ability to control your money, aka giving away your private keys, you're opening yourself up to a risk where they could defraud you and take your money. Be very cautious of this and help educate people about the importance of, yes, after you've acquired your first Bitcoin, please educate yourself about how to move away from centralized services.
I definitely agree with everything you say, but then in another way, I completely disagree, because I think once you start talking about private keys, you are going to hinder adoption from people that just will not be interested to learn. And you know, there is something for convenience. And that's one of the things you hear when you talk about Bitcoin with someone who isn't converted. They'll say, oh, the bank works fine. And I want to say, it does it. And usually that creates just, you know, an awkward silence. But it's true, does it? But you don't really think about it because it's easy to just pay for your groceries with a credit card. And I think everything you say is completely factual. And I think as the Bitcoin space matures, a lot of the bad actors are going to be weeded out. There are going to always be some less trustworthy ones. But I think there needs to be a happy medium here where it's not going to freak people out as soon as you start talking about owning your private keys. And there is an issue there. And that's where I think Circle hits a home run, is it's easy. You're right. You are trusting them if you're keeping it in their wallet. Absolutely. I agree completely. And as soon as I bought some, I got it out of there. Not because I don't trust them, but just because I don't trust anyone. A wise man named Stone Cold Steve Austin once said, DTA, don't trust anyone. And, you know, he's a very wise man. So I do think that's a good rule to have. But I don't think that it's something where forcing that as an education point is going to actually help Bitcoin adoption. I think it's something really that should be pressed on people that are more into it in general.
Well, it's really a matter of risk, you know, versus convenience. If yes, you're entrusting Circle or Coinbase or who, you know, whatever the online hosted wallet service is, you're trusting them with your funds. But that's the way that the masses get into Bitcoin. You know, people don't know how to set up their own wallet, so they go to a web service and they make that happen. As soon as they acquire or accumulate a non-trivial amount of funds, they're going to start researching just instinctually, how do I protect this? You know, this doesn't seem right. You know, you don't have all of your money in your checking account. You know, you have a savings account or you have investments. You know, people, the more Bitcoin people acquire, the more options they're going to seek as far as how to secure amounts of those. And they're going to start learning about what does it mean to protect your private keys. So I think that these services are important in their own right as far as driving adoption, but they are toxic in that, you know, we have to educate people that don't store a non-trivial amount of your money. You know, Eric, hold on to this $400 for me and give it back to me tomorrow, but I'm not going to give you my savings account, you know. So
yeah, I don't think that the two problems are necessarily directly in opposition to each other, though, quite frankly. And maybe we don't even have to educate about public and private key cryptography. I totally agree. It's going to turn off the majority of audiences. Now, the future that I want to live in is one where, you know, kids are taught public and cryptography in elementary school.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? That I want to move towards that. And the way we get towards that, you're right, is a positive user experience, which is why I constantly underscore we have to make it easy. But I think even a credit card swipe or whatever that may be can be, okay, don't lose your card because it's one or two of the signatures required out of a multi-sig wallet, blah, 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 blah. You can explain the technicals all day long. But having a website that offers a wallet can be done without giving away your private keys. And we don't have to teach about private keys directly, but we just have to educate people about this voluntarism. Be sure this is what you want about putting your money in someone else's hands and not having the ability to protect yourself. If we just sort of like onboard people and then never educate them about that, then we're just making an audience full of people who will be stolen from. So,
yeah, I do think you're right. I also think that education is the key in general. And when you said that, I wanted to go on a side rant, so I will. About education in general, and that things like that and You know, I've often said I lament the fact that I was never given the opportunity to learn anything about programming or coding in high school. And it's something where why aren't we teaching that? We're teaching a lot of nonsense, and there's things that are actually helpful that will improve the world and improve their lives, the kids' lives. And I think it's mostly because there's lack of qualified teachers that know it, because those that know it right now are the ones that are working in companies. They're not, and you know, making that field bigger. But it's going to be interesting. And when I was talking earlier about all the things that happened this week with decentralization and how many like very major things are going to come because of it, it really is something where the educational factor needs to be just raised exponentially in order for, you know, future generations to exist in the world.
Man, fuck the education system. I don't.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Like, seriously, we don't need teachers to fix the education system. We need to empower people to help themselves, not like rely on some centralized system of education that clearly is incapable of educating people. Clearly.
Well, I wanted to kind of touch on something that Tony had said. You know, he said it's a, you know, part of the problem is a lack of qualified teachers. And I don't necessarily think that that's true. I think that there are a lot of qualified teachers in the space. What I think the fundamental problem is that the public school system does not is not driven by the education of its student body. It's driven by funding and test scores and moving one number from one side of the ledger to the other side of the ledger so that it's just
agreed.
There's a different purpose there, and so put your kid in private school, homeschool them, or whatever. Yeah. You know,
here's the thing that you're right, it does come down to dollars and cents, but also it comes down to learning styles. Everyone has different learning styles. Some people learn really well sitting in a lecture. Some people really learn well by reading something on the internet by themselves. And that's where, you know, you're really towing a line, where what we're doing is we're sending kids where there's one learning style that's promoted. And if you don't learn that way, you know, you're not going to be seen as being able to learn anything.
Exactly.
And a lot of those times, those are the ones that really have the opportunities to teach themselves.
This is why I think that standardized education has destroyed the United States and is ultimately destroying the world. We need to get rid of standardized education and build a system where the people can have specialized education targeted to the way they learn, what they want to learn, and what will empower them to pursue their own dreams and goals. Standardized education is bullshit. It's been bullshit since the Prussian Empire started enforcing it, since the British started copying it, and since the Americans introduced the standardized test specifically to produce more soldiers that could battle on the frickin' battlefield. We need to get rid of standardized education in favor of specialized systems.
Absolutely, and I think we also need to promote more parental choice here, and the parents should be able to do whatever they wish to educate their kids. And you know, I think the old unschooling movement's really cool because it really is, you know, giving kids a passion. Whereas folks like me, I graduated high school. I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do. You know, I had no love of anything other than, you know, whatever nonsense existed. And it took me a while to find something I loved. But the fact that I had nothing I loved really was the sad part. You know, that's the saddest part. And I don't remember who said the quote, but someone said, you know, learning, the only thing that's impeded my learning is education. And I think that's true. And I think that's very true in a lot of cases.
All right, let's move on to the BitTorrent bundle. So Tom York released an album via BitTorrent. What do you think about that as somebody who's been pretty well involved in the music industry?
Yeah, I thought the experience really worked well. I bought it immediately. I just wanted to test it out. You know, it uses a typical torrent. It's just behind a paywall. So it's not necessarily anything revolutionary as it sounds. I do love the reaction it's getting in the music press is that, oh, look, it's another gimmick from Tom York. And they're kind of right. It is kind of a gimmick. I do think there is some value to how it's used, and the fact that, you know, they're taking a lot less of a cut than an iTunes would. I think that's pretty cool. I really do like BitTorrent for hosting, and I think for music it could really work well for a lot of artists. I just don't think it would work well for artists that don't have a huge name like Tom York. A lot of other bands have done distribution this way, and some have made it work, a lot haven't. It's just about the fact that he's the singer of Radiohead, and you know he's going to have a certain amount of people that are going to pay for that record no matter what. The interesting thing I would like to know would be how many new users to BitTorrent did this create? That, to me, is very interesting, and see if it got more people aboard. You know, BitTorrent's pretty great. I'm a big fan. I like a lot of things to do with it. And it just, it's something where it's treated me well. And if I'm trying to find something, especially like older media on a private tracker, it's really nice. And same with like some public domain stuff that you can't even get on archive.org, whereas some really weird niche film torrent tracker will have it. It's awesome. I love that. I just don't necessarily think that it's going to work for music in general in the future. I think the answer needs to be more sophisticated.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think that a paywall for a BitTorrent distributed album is the right solution here, but I think what you did hit on there is is how the press is treating it. I think that's important. I would provide some conjecture and suggest that this didn't actually generate very much new BitTorrent users or very many new BitTorrent users, but I do think that it shows that there are some people out there actually thinking about this problem. I think the sophisticated solution we're looking for is perhaps something that uses payment channels and an actual magnet link, and maybe you stream audio and you pay somebody for that service, right, rather than downloading a copy of it but still offering the copy of it. I don't know what that solution is, but this isn't it.
And I'm not sure that there is a solution. I have a weird position on this. I think that the value in 2014 of a song, a digital recording of a song, is zero or next to zero. I'm not saying that it's not quality, and I'm not saying you don't have the right to ask for money for it. But what I am saying is the actual value of that song is zero, right, or close to zero. So, because,
well, you're actually the reason that the value of that song is next to zero is because you don't own the song. We can find a solution if you identify the problem correctly, and the problem is not about payment or what people value music at. The problem is that when you purchase digital music, you're not purchasing digital music. You're purchasing a license that allows you to listen to that music for a period of time or have on your device, or you don't own the material. You know, if you go into a store and you buy a CD, it's still the same thing, but at least you own a physical copy of the CD. You can share that with your friend. You can make a copy of it. You can rip it to your computer or whatever. But you digital rights management in digital music distribution is the fucking devil.
Yeah, I agree. So what is of value, however, in music is the artist's talent, okay? That is definitely a value and cannot be replicated because it is a finite resource. Now, if you want to talk about the economics of digital media, digital assets of any sort, or even art in general, what is of value is something that is finite, which is why it's very difficult. DRM is bullshit because digital assets can be copied effectively infinitely. The demand is finite. So if you look at the simple laws of supply and demand, demand is finite, supply is effectively infinite, the value is zero or
exactly
approaching zero. So the value of the zeros and ones that compose an MP3 that represents, you know, one copy of an infinite number that you can create is zero. Now, the value in the talent that went into producing that is definitely clear. I think the ultimate solution here will be one that recognizes and rewards artists for value, rather than a copy of something that can be copied infinitely. Now, a physical CD or a vinyl record or a cassette tape, whatever that may be, that has value because there is a finite number of them. And I think that's ultimately where the solution will lie, is in monetizing resources that are finite as opposed to infinite resources.
Absolutely. And I think the smarter artists have figured that out, and they've, you know, decided, hey, we're going to sell more than just shirts. We're going to sell whatever we can come up with to, you know, put our name on. Oh, some of it is a little bit, you know, brand whoring, but in the same token, you know, they're making a living. I can't dog them for that. The thing that frustrates me is if you talk to artists, often they're the first to complain about royalty checks and things like that. And I want to look at them and go, like, what you don't understand is you're living in an era that's actually better for you as an artist than has existed since modern communication. The gatekeepers are minimized. You can get your art out to anyone you want. You can build a fan base, and you can build a pretty sizable fan base because artists have done this. I mean, you don't really hear them on the radio much, but there's a reason there's artists that are playing huge crowds that, you know, most people haven't heard of. You know, there really is a lot of advantages to doing this right now. And what they're doing is they're really, really holding on to these old ways of making money that, you know, did work because there was no other options. But now that there's other options, I really wish that artists in general would have a better business sense, which I know you really can't say that. It's always just something where, you know, there's different instances. Some do, some don't. But I think that if they realize, and I'm speaking obviously in really generic terms here, the benefit of what they're living through now and how, you know, they don't have to go in debt $500,000 to record their first record because they release it on a major.
It's those centralized labels and producers and all that stuff. Like, anytime you have a centralized party and they're going to be taking a cut, like the royalty checks that artists get today is like, you know, pennies on the dollar that's being generated from their work. And I think that's absurd. In the same way that Bitcoin is disintermediating the financial system and the banking system and the governments, I think that there will exist a disintermediary solution to the music industry, to the film industry, to everything. And that is really the tool to do that is decentralization, right? You create tools that are a decentralized solution that can be done peer-to-peer and ultimately allow a trust and reputation system to develop within that system. You will disintermediate these third parties, which are squeezing the life out of artists and real people who are producing goods of value and services of value, squeezing the life and ultimately stealing from them, right? Preventing them from really earning a living from just doing their work and directly delivering it to their fans. Decentralization is key to all of these things.
Yeah, and to, like, I want to wrap this up, but I do want to make one more comment about music in general. Is to me, this whole decentralization thing and Bitcoin, and it's the most punk rock thing out there in the purest sense. And it shocks me that more forward thinking, really big name artists, and I think we spoke to Shooter about this, are involved in this. They don't see this. They don't see what's happening. They don't see the benefit to it. They don't see the benefit for the world for it. And it's really something where there are some, but the really big names that do have influence, like the David Byrnes, the Neil Youngs, the, you know, the Trent Reznors, the Dr. Dre's, the Kanye Wests, they're not involved. And it's just kind of like, is Apple, I'm grammatically incorrect today, are they the ones that are going to, you know, create a better future for music distribution because they bought Beats?
Come on.
They bought a really crappy streaming service. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just that's the basket where they're putting their eggs.
Yeah.
And I get it because, you know, a $2 billion payout. I don't blame them. Hey, make your money. But also realize that you're not really solving anything. Just admit it to yourself.
Yeah, man. Hack the planet. Let's disintermediate everything.
Just to be clear, Apple's not here to solve anything. They're here to destroy the world.
That seems to summarize my
I don't think they're here to destroy the world. I think they're here to make a lot of money. That's it. Yeah. They're like any other business. But we can move on from that and talk about something actually that is very interesting, and it has to do with the protests in China and the use of the Fire Chat app. And it is a meshnet messaging app, and this is how they're coordinating a lot of protests and how they're really rising up without the ability to access the traditional internet as we know it, and instead using a completely alternate version of it that really just works for them to get their message across. It's really turning into a big story in the media, too, and probably the biggest story decentralized technology has had in a minute as far as, you know, on a global scale.
I'm so excited about this.
Like, it is kind of awesome.
I've had FireChat installed on my phone since it was released. I love it. I haven't had as many people to use it with as I would like. But how many of you guys saw that picture, right?
Yep.
Where there's like thousands of people on the street and they are holding their phones in the air and every single person has this device, which is empowering them to communicate person to person without using a cell tower, without using some Wi-Fi node, but directly phone to phone. This is the single biggest use of a mesh network and that has existed to date. And it is actually affecting change in a government somewhere, right? Well, remains to be seen. But this is a massive movement and one of the most exciting things that has happened in a very long time since, like, even the early days of Bitcoin and as it was gaining its initial traction. I think this is massive, and we'll start to see more energy put behind the number of meshnet projects that are out there as a result of this, because we can all use this as an example of, look, this happened. These thousands of people are bypassing government suppression by using a decentralized technology and a mesh network. And I can't even contain my excitement about this.
It gives
just
me the
awesome.
Goosebumps.
It's amazing because, like, this is the pure case of a people being empowered to do something and having the freedom to communicate with each other. That is the essence of freedom.
I think you're right. It is the essence of freedom, and it's something where there is a lot of, you know, things like this that are going to come out. And as the technology gets better and more people use it, obviously, that's the success of any mesh network, is depending on the people that use it. And it's going to involve people like us telling our friends, hey, check this out, and here's why you should use it. And I try not to get too philosophical. I try to get more technological and go like, this is really neat. This is why it's neat. When I talk about Bitcoin, I don't talk about politics ever. It's irrelevant to me. What's relevant to me is it's neat. It's cool. Like, I like it. I like the idea behind it. And I do think that once this spreads and it becomes, you know, easier and easier to use and more people use it, this will become the default, specifically for things like messaging. I think it's really built well for messaging because, you know, text is not huge. They're not huge data files. You can, you know, transmit them pretty quickly.
So, like, WhatsApp and there's a couple others out there, right, that are used pretty prominently that are basically bypass the SMS network, right? And they use a centralized service to transit their own off-chain messages, right? I think that has been the intermediary step. One of the things that's really interesting to me from the protests in Hong Kong, it points out the importance of network density, right? So I have had FireChat, I've had Open Garden. The only time when these apps have been useful is when my nearby peers and the friends around me are also using this. So I've used Open Garden at conferences before. I've used it on a plane. There was like two people on a plane one time that had Open Garden connections, and one of them had an internet access, which subsequently granted the other two of us internet access. It was awesome. And we didn't know who each other were. We were transiting in encrypted communications across this network. But the importance of density, which goes back to the education problem and this word of mouth thing, it's each and every one of our responsibilities to help educate everyone we interact with and get them onto this technology so that when push comes to shove, when people start walking the streets with guns, when all of this shit starts going down, we're not broadsided and the population is not caught unexpectedly and doesn't have a way of communicating or coordinating. I think it's absolutely essential to get these technological solutions in place and educate everyone around us.
Well, I think what's so exciting and encouraging to me about this specific story, but on a more broad note, just decentralization in general, is that we're reaching a point in time where we are up into, for all we've known of human history, governments have been in some capacity necessary. You know, people have a tendency to organize, and that ultimately leads to the centralization. But we're living in an age of technology where we're empowering ourselves to undermine the need for governments. And I don't think they don't like that. You know, it's a
no.
problem. It's a problem for them. No, we're literally able to empower ourselves to operate completely devoid of any authority or government, completely and solely due to the technology that we're developing
That's
on
right.
a day-to-day basis.
That's right.
Eventually, we won't need governments. We'll be able to communicate and reach consensus and decide things without the need for any of this bullshit.
Freedom and independence for all. Opt-in, peer-to-peer. Only elect myself into a contract that I want to opt into. No forced authority over me whatsoever.
I think that is a noble goal, and it is the way I think things will exist in the future. But I think just the thought of that terrifies a lot of people. And I obviously, the people that are in charge and those that control these power structures don't like it. But I think what freaks me out more is that normal people believe what they read from, I hate to use this term, but corporate media, and they read it. And it's like with this issue of the FBI and police departments having problems with Apple and Google using encryption on their new smart devices. It's just like, how can you accept what they're saying? How can you believe that bullshit? And people do. And
well,
that's the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's all of this is very seductive to us because I think it's we work with it directly. We understand the technology and we see how it can actually affect change. Now, for everyone else, it looks like we're sort of like conspiracy theorists, or you know, oh, that'll never happen, da 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 da. You know, you don't have to worry about that. You can trust your government. Have no worries. It's okay.
When people say that to me, when I, you know, because when I drink, I like to rant about things like this.
We all do.
Yes. When people say, make those sorts of comments at me, I just kind of smirk and look at them and say, I want you to remember this moment. I just want you to remember what you said. And 10 years from now, when we're drinking again, remember.
Just remember, remember the 5th of November. By the way, Introducing Niels is coming out, I believe, on the 5th of November, right?
I believe so.
Awesome. I'm really excited for that. That's Whitey Cracker's new album. In any case, it's like, it's also, to me, a sign of how the education has completely failed the world. This centralized education model, standardized education, in that I look at them and I see a majority of effectively brainwashed individuals who are
– Who I lovingly refer to as marks all the time. You can attest to that.
They are all
marks. They're marks, yeah.
And they're not – it's not their fault. It's the education system's fault. It's the centralized power's fault. And that's why we need to disrupt that all centralized powers, so that we can finally, for the past like 100 years, remove this fucking massive behemoth of fucktardery that has developed into this brainwashing of the majority of the population at this point. We gotta wake everybody up and show them, like, you know, the true reality. Give everybody the red pill, right? Like, I mean.
Well, the pill is clearly information, and as we're getting more of it, you know, that process of the formalized, standardized education worked because there was nothing better at the time.
That's right.
And now we have something better, so it's like, okay, let's move on now. We're past the horse and buggy era. Let's get some cars.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important thing to realize right now is, you know, I don't want to knock that and say that it is responsible for everything that exists and that people's opinions exist, but what I will say is, again, there's something better now. So why would you rely on this old system when there's something that works better and just works more efficiently all around?
I agree. Yeah, I really like the analogy of us being in the cart and buggy sort of thing and then moving into this more modern era. And speaking of, Reddit is using the blockchain technology purportedly to give 10% ownership of their recent Series B funding to their actual users. This is unprecedented, right? People raise funding all the time for entrepreneurship and, you know, their startups, and they give equity to the person who injects the capital, and now that person now owns a part of that company. Reddit's decision to distribute equity to its users is awesome, absolutely fantastic. And once I heard that there were some ruminations of them issuing some sort of crypto asset, I got really excited about this. Gordon, what'd you think?
Well, they're not really talking about it too much as far as the specifics of the implementation, but it is very interesting. You know, how will the funds be issued, you know, to users? You could be using a blockchain-like technology, but still the issuance of that currency is lends itself to a centralization, right? So how does that get distributed? Do they generate a key pair and then allow you to decrypt that key? Whether they email it to you and you decrypt it with your Reddit password? You know, I mean, it's still kind of – it'll be really interesting to see how exactly they go about distributing those funds.
Yeah, and I don't think that they're actually going to be issuing funds, so it's not going to be a currency. Now, it may be built into the Bitcoin blockchain, right? What I think is going to happen, and what I predict, is that it's going to be an equity issuance, right? It just is a simple certificate, a contract of representation of ownership over something. So maybe this may bleed into the potential for a voting system that exists in a blockchain-like format. Where your percentage ownership, proof of stake, will go into decision-making processes. Now, that's a little far-fetched in the short term because this is really the first time we've seen this. Outside of the cryptocurrency ecosystem, I should point out several others have offered equities-type stakes in the form of crypto assets. But the other interesting thing is Ryan Charles is now, I believe, heading this up over there. He recently joined Reddit. I know personally that he's a fantastic engineer, and I'm really excited to see what Reddit is going to be doing as a result of Ryan's taking lead over there. I'm super excited for that.
Absolutely. I think it's a good step in that direction, especially toward community ownership of the place where many in the community communicate. You know, I'm on our Atlanta. You know, I want to see what's going on around town. I still follow our Detroit, so I don't have to go to the local news sites to see what's happening. I think that, you know, it's a great way to really get that out there and to give ownership back to those who created it. It's very cool, very unique stance they're taking, and I love how they had to reinforce the message, like, you know, everything we're doing is completely legal. Like, it's like, well, why wouldn't it be? But then you realize, oh, there's many reasons it would be. But then none of them valid, by the way. What they're doing is very clever and very awesome.
So you just called the SEC invalid, right?
No.
I think you should say that because I believe that. The SEC is complete bullshit and people should be able to do this shit on their own.
Well, ideally, yeah, but not my call. I'm not going to be concerned with it. I got other things to worry about.
Where's your fight, Tony?
You got to pick. Here's the thing: you got to pick your battles, right? You got to know which hills to die on.
I pick them all.
Yeah, I've picked poor hills. I've picked up very poor hills to die on in the past, and I learned a lot from that. And I learned what makes you personally happy is sometimes doing something for the greater good, but you don't necessarily have to do everything for the greater good because your own happiness matters a lot. Because without looking out for number one, you can't look out for number two. So that's just my own personal philosophical belief. And it has nothing to do with declaring the validity of the SEC, because ideally I agree with you. But in reality, it really doesn't affect my life much. You know, I'm gonna go home and I'm going to go to a concert tonight with my girlfriend, and then I'm probably going to watch some wrestling and I'm going to go to bed.
What?
You know, and that's just what's
going to
happen.
See, and that is the essence. Like, I think you embody exactly what the majority of people do. Mm-hmm. They don't want to care about these things. They want to just focus on the pursuit of happiness, right? Which is good. That's ideal. That's what we want. We want people to worry about that. But it is absolutely necessary when we find things that obstruct the pursuit of happiness to eliminate them, mm-hmm, ultimately, and get them out of people's ways, so that when you go to do the concert and you go to purchase something, you're not actually paying some fat cat who's sitting behind his desk somewhere at some cough corporation that is siphoning off funds from the person you're doing business with, and subsequently allowing any such organization from spinning up on their own with freedom to do so and let others opt into that system, regardless of how they choose to issue ownership over their own organization. How can we say to promote innovation if, you know, there's such strict regulations about how you form a company, right? Or how you fund that company. You know what? Like, if I want to create a new and innovative idea on how to crowdfund something, or how to, you know, if create some non-ownership form of an idea organization that just has an objective and wants to solve that, I don't care who owns or operates it, let me do that. How are you? You can't claim to promote innovation if you stifle it like this with organizations like the SEC and, you know, all of these regulatory frameworks.
Yeah, it's. I think my point is more knowing your hill to die on, and knowing who your enemies are, and knowing how to fight them. And you're right that more people should get mad and have fight all the time. But I learned firsthand that, you know, you can't change the world on your own. What you can do is, you know, if someone else has a great idea that you really believe in, you can do like me, uplift my life and move down here to Atlanta for it. And I'm a much happier person because of that, because I'm working for something I really believe in. But I will say that, you know, that's not available for most people. There's a lot of people that will not have the opportunities that, you know, any of us have, or anyone has, to really find something they love that is improving the world and go toward it. So, you know, you're in a weird, like a catch-22 position where you want to, and you do care, and you care a lot, but you also realize that all that emotion and energy that's put into caring becomes something where, you know, you become that person on Facebook that does nothing but post political rants all day. And,
yeah,
and I don't want to be that. Like, I mean, I'm sure I have in the past, but, you know, the older I get, the more I realize, you know, hey, this doesn't matter. What matters is how my family and friends are doing, and, you know, what I'm happy doing what I want. And this is a personal thing. This isn't societal.
Yeah. So spreading the message is important.
Yes.
And I said this earlier, but what is more important is taking action, right? Is actually, mm-hmm, not just posting on Facebook or posting on Twitter what your ideas are and what you want to rant against, but actually going and doing and building and creating. Look, I'm digging a tunnel out of prison so we can all escape, right? Mm-hmm. I've just upgraded from a toothpick to a teaspoon. And what I'm trying to do now is upgrade to a trowel so we can get this going a little bit faster and dig this tunnel a little bit faster so we can all get the hell out of this imprisonment, okay? So someone does have to take lead on that, right? Someone does have to, you know, yes, spread the good gospel, spread the word of why these things are important. But it's also really important to be out there writing code, building, constructing, and actually building the things that others will need to pursue happiness.
Yeah, and it's more important that that people know how to do that, and I think in the future they will. I think that's something that's slowly changing, but I also think that there's a lot of folks out there that don't have those skills, that want to participate, that believe it's a noble cause, and that's where I like to think I fit in, is that I'm someone that will be that person talking about it and saying, hey, here's why this is important, and I think that you're right, talking about it, getting it known, and direct action matters a lot too, and getting people that are building this is really the most important thing. And I think that there needs to be, in general, it's easy to step away from it and say, hey, this is wrong. There needs to be a bigger push to the developers and all the very large, you know, the Apples, the Googles, the whoever, whatever company, to embrace these ideals more in what they're creating, not just necessarily embracing it, you know, on their, you know, social media accounts, but embracing it in a true way. But, you know, it's easy to say that from afar. It's much easier to point out the faults.
I don't view any of this as noble. I view it all as a necessity.
I think one man's nobility is another's necessity. You know, I think that's fair. And while we were talking about this deep, deep subject, I have even bigger news. You can now go to shitexpress.com and send a box of shit to someone with Bitcoin. Right now they only have horse shit, but if you know someone
actual shit?
Yes, Shit Express. I feel bad for plugging
them. I've got a fucking list of people.
Yeah, I saw this today and I thought it was just fantastic.
List?
Yes, exactly. It is a shit list.
Oh, this is so cool.
We need that L7 song on right now. either way, I think that's hilarious, and I think it's really someone with a very, probably what people would say is a dumb idea that actually brought it to light, and I bet people use this.
Do you know what does a box of shit cost? How many Bitcoin?
I think it's like, I don't know what it would be with the conversion. It was like $12.99 American.
For one box of shit?
For horse shit. They only had a horse available.
That's okay.
I want human shit because that's more degrading.
Oh, yeah.
But
I downvoted that on Reddit. I was like,
Eric,
this is the stupidest fucking thing to gain publicity ever. Like,
really?
Are you kidding me?
You've never known anyone you wanted to send a box of shit
no,
to?
No. That's
ever?
None. Never.
Oh, man.
Ever.
All I know is keep an eye on Twitter for hashtag Sony shitbox. Because I'm all over that.
That's awesome.
That's funny.
I do think that you can create a business out of anything, and that kind
more
of
power.
It.
Look, more power to the people who created it. Fine, that's awesome. I hope that you were successful in your endeavor. I just think that it's sour spirited and I don't
shitty.
Yeah,
it is. You're right. It's very sour spirited, but I think it's funny. And I think it must be, no pun intended on this one, a shitty job for the person that has to go collect it. So, you know, there's some guy that's like sifting through it, making sure that the samples are right, that they smell well enough, that it's not crusted over so it smells when they open the box. Like, quality control has got to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I think you're really digging here.
How is this legal? Like, I mean, is there no... I mean,
fertilizer?
I'm not saying that it should be outlawed. I'm just curious as to, you know, what's going to happen when the first guy receives a big box of horse shit and he calls his local authorities and he's, you know, he claims he's being harassed.
Or, they'll laugh at him and hang
up
on him.
That's harassment. I would totally agree. Yeah. It's harassment.
Biological warfare. Yeah. It is biological warfare. I don't know how that would be handled.
I mean,
in a
is that their
sense.
Pitch? Is that their sales kit? They are like, hey, you guys should send shit to the people you don't like. Is that really what they're selling here?
More or less. I mean, would you send it to people you like? Maybe if they had like a farm or a garden.
Man, this is bullshit.
Let's see how many shit puns we can work into one.
I was about to say these puns are getting pretty shitty.
Yeah, they are. And that's why we're going to end the talk about shit right there. But I figured that, you know, with all the big names joining the Bitcoin universe, that Shit Express deserves their moment of fame, and
no.
That's what it's going to be.
No.
No?
No, that's the last thing that, you know, the public needs to see is, like, people are sending shit to each other. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Well, yeah, obviously, but also... How I respect the ingenuity, and that's why I wanted to talk about it.
I'll say this: I respect the the free market and the right of the individual to sell boxes of shit for Bitcoin. And I respect it so much that I will purchase one box of shit.
Awesome. I don't want to know who the recipient is. Don't.
Oh, you'll know.
Oh, thanks. I'm going to be looking forward to that. I'm sure my girlfriend will
open it. $12.99 is a pretty high premium for a piece of shit, right? $12.99, right? Is that what it is?
I believe so.
Well, shipping and handling.
Don't quote
the handling
me on that.
Part of shipping.
Handling, you're right. You're
and
right.
And don't quote me on that.
Wait. Like, what do farmers pay when they need manure to fertilize stuff?
I don't know, but look at guano.
Like, there should be a law about this to regulate this so that, you know, they can stop wasting shit and start building, like,
wasting
making
shit.
Things.
So did you say there should be a law about
something? Being facetious.
You're being facetious?
Oh, boy.
I got one more in there.
Yeah, you did. And it was the best of them all. It is something, well, if you think about it, though, waste does, as I just mentioned, guano, that's used. There's a lot of things that waste is actually used for, and it's kind of like the fact that our the ground, the soil that we have, actually should be urinated on a lot more to have healthier soil.
I can help with that.
Yeah, and it's just something where that's now considered, you know, very uncouth or whatever word you want to use, where it's kind of like, really? That's something where manners took over from what's best for the earth. But whatever, it's...
Yeah, you know what interests me? So in Atlanta here, they took the Ebola patients to the Atlanta hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had trouble disposing of the waste for the Ebola patients. Now, this is maybe slightly tangential, but it gets me to thinking about how in the developed world we've really stopped taking care of our land and we've sort of like completely misused it.
You mean the one thing the government should actually do?
Yeah, right, exactly. So in other places, like where Ebola is actually, you know, a problem, they take their waste to an area and they burn it, right? Mm-hmm. They completely destroy the waste. What would be the outcry if someone burned their waste here? Like, the Emory Hospital actually had trouble disposing of their waste for two patients, which kind of leads me to worry a little bit about, you know, what is the capacity of the American healthcare system to deal with an epidemic of Ebola? And if you saw the first,
FEMA's got you covered.
Oh yeah. Trust FEMA, and they're, you know, oh boy, I'm gonna look like more of a conspiracy theorist now. But look at trust them and their, you know, requisition trucks and guns and ammo stockpiles and all this bullshit. Like, no, centralized authority is not the way to solve these problems. Period.
I would agree with you, but I'd also say, what is the way? That's the question.
I can't tell you what the way is, especially, like, I don't know how to solve Ebola. I'm not an Ebola expert, but I would say let the people figure it out. Like, let the people create the correct solution by creating an open and free market that lets it develop rather than being centrally mandated. We've seen how central mandates have worked with the education system. They don't. They, in fact, brainwash entire generations of people. So fuck that. Let the free market solve the problem.
Yeah, I do agree, and I think that if you look at history, and to me it's more of a pharmaceutical issue, there was a guy by the name of Jonas Salk who actually, you know, created the polio vaccine, and he pretty much gave it away. Didn't do a patent, just said, here, take it, humanity. And you know what? He's pretty famous, and I'm pretty sure he had enough money to take care of his shit. You know, he was able he was able to take care of those around him, and he did something great for humanity. And this is another issue, you know, patent laws and how much they're for the pharmaceutical industry. It really kills me the most because it's really, really hurting a lot of people, and it's really forcing diseases that could be cured to just stagnate and exist. And there's a great Chris Rock line where he talks about, you know, how long they can let you live, and this is 15, 20 years ago, with AIDS. You can live forever, but you never are cured. Why? Because there's no money in a cure. There's only money in treatment for the problem. And when you can somehow uncouple those two things, that will be the actual solution. Is we need to go back to that mindset that Jonas Salk had, that, you know, the reason they're studying this, and obviously they need money, so there needs to be a capitalistic system, but the reason isn't for necessary monetary gains. It's to help others, and money will come with that. And I think that's a realignment, and I think it's an alignment that a lot in the capitalist society needs to adjust themselves. And it's almost like when I hear politicians talking about it all the time that are very, you know, they're very pro-capitalism, and I am too. But I'm also very anti-rigged capitalism, like I think we have, and it could be improved upon.
We don't even have capitalism in the United States.
Not really.
There, you know, in the sort of the outcry of Occupy Wall Street and all this, everyone, you saw a lot of banners like, capitalism is the devil, right? Or like anti-capitalism. Well, like fucking A, we don't even have capitalism in this country. We have statism is what we've got. It's where you have a centralized authority who's determining who gets the money and who doesn't. And the way you get the money is by feeding more money back into the system and helping someone else get paid. That's not fucking capitalism, right? You can't argue against capitalism if you don't even have it to begin with.
Yeah,
it's really important here. Like, look, this podcast would not even be possible, right? Like, all intellectual property, all of this stuff, like, the internet, Reddit wouldn't even be possible. Apple wouldn't be possible, really, without the internet. And when Timothy Berners-Lee created it at CERN, rather than keeping it as sort of like a private research project to solve a private problem, he made the decision, he realized, correctly, with the intellectual prowess that he had, that how important it was to facilitate communication between people, computer systems, whatever it may be, and so he made the decision to give it away. And the only reason we have all of the amazing things that we do today is because that man made the decision to give it away rather than try to assert ownership or rights over it. You can't assert ownership or rights over an idea that anybody could have at any time just because someone came up with a similar idea at a similar time than you or even subsequent to you temporally does not mean that you have any rights that you can assert over that individual. I think that's absurd and it completely counterproductive in terms of human progress.
Yeah, I do want to go back to when you mentioned the beginning of the internet, which I think is funny. And we were talking earlier about the role of government and what they should do and what they shouldn't do. Didn't the government have a heavy stake in the creation of the internet? And I'm not saying this to be like a ha got you, but I have a further point. Yeah, they did. And when I see the internet now and I see that, okay, I'm from Detroit. And in the city in Detroit, there are schools that have an internet connection, but there's no one that knows how to hook up the computers in the schools. And these are public high schools with thousands of students, right? And you see this, and I go, you know what the government's role should be? It should be to create a broadband system that is competitive with other leading countries, that's free for all to use, and, you know, invest in that. That's what I want. If I'm going to pay taxes, I want it invested in that, much like, you know, the investments in roads in the past, because that is for the greater good. And you know, that's where I disagree a lot with, you know, the role of government. I think the government should do very few things because it doesn't do things well, but it should do things that people can't be trusted with. And I know that defeats the purpose because, you know, Bitcoin obviously is trusted. To me, that is handled by math, not by people. But there are some things that society and technology is not ready to answer yet. So we need to create, like, you know, a stopgap in between it so we can fix those issues. But access to information is what's going to improve this and creating a better broadband system. And obviously, you can't depend on the free market to do that because, well, we're not in the free market, obviously. But you look at how great Comcast and Time Warner and all the people that are controlling the internet here are doing. So there needs – and I can't say this should be the government's role. But if it was the government's role and this was handled as a utility from a governmental stance, and once the initial investment is made, I think it would be a wise investment, much wiser than almost all the spending we're doing.
It's not possible for the government to do a better job at anything than the people are. The people are what compose the government, and it's up to the people to elect and form a new system that is outside of the government, if necessary, and if it can build something better.
We need a global mesh net is what we need.
We absolutely need a global mesh net so that there is no centralized authority on the internet whatsoever. I think, yes, the government invested in a private organization to create parts of the internet, absolutely. And I think that was helpful. That's great. But it still could be done better. We're now moving into a new era where it is possible for people to do things on a peer-to-peer basis and elect themselves into a mutual agreement with the other people that they have similar goals with. You can call that a government if you want, but in reality, it's sort of a contractual peer-to-peer government, right? Like, that's what I want to look for. I don't think any centralized authority, such as, you know, a centralized government, can ever do anything that is better than the people can do it. The people have the power and need to be reminded that they're the ones holding the power. And subsequently, that is how we're going to see proper innovation and true deliver of value to people around you.
What I'm thinking is more as a person that is involved on Earth. I just had to say that. I don't know why it made me laugh, but it did. That, you know, working toward that is a noble goal, and it is something that really is great for everything. But it's also something that we're not ready for. There aren't replacements right now for that. So I want to work the government into creating a better a way where we can make this happen easier.
There are replacements for it. There are replacements for every single centralized function that exists today. CJDNS, for example. FireChat is a great example. Like, this can all happen if we all work together and make it happen, which is why I'm so impassioned by all of this sort of decentralization. Like, we have to push this, push, because breaking this 100-year regime, especially in the United States, look, it's time for regime change, and we need to restore the power to the people ultimately.
Oh, yeah. And I think you're right, but I think that there's a percentage of people that will be unable to participate in that because they don't have the access to information. And that's something where Bitcoin – another reason that I was really into Bitcoin was, imagine how many countries that are in perpetual poverty because of their local economy, their currency, their government. And here's something that could fix that. Now the smartest minds in these places are going to be able in the future to contribute to, you know, humanity. And that's cool.
Right.
And that's absolutely what needs to happen. And it's something where we need to make sure that they also have the information. To me, building a school in you know, a poor village in Africa is nowhere near as noble of a goal. Or I keep saying noble, and I shouldn't use that word. Is nowhere near as useful as giving them broadband internet access.
I think that access to information is a fundamental human right.
Yes.
Free, open, and private communications is a fundamental human right. I should be able to talk with my neighbor and ultimately be sure that those conversations are between me and my neighbor without any outside influence. And I think, yes, I think that is noble, but it's a basic right. And it's you can't even like try to claim the banner of nobility when what all you're trying to do is give people the rights that they had in the first place that have been stolen from them by centralized entities.
And with that being said, we're going to wrap up this episode of Decentralized. I'd like to thank Gordon Hall and Eric Martindale for being awesome roundtable guests this week, and we will be back next week with a brand new episode. Thanks.